You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people who are trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Mobile communications is back in the news this week, with Telstra trumpeting the launch of the new 21 megabit per second next-g mobile phone network. But what does it mean to those currently using the mobile network? Well, not much. Marketing departments love touting the maximum possible. Included in Telstra's press release was a report from a company called Concept Economics, not to be confused with Access Economics, the government's preferred supplier of statistical and analytical information. According to the report, Concept Economics defines Next-G as a 3G mobile network that can achieve very high data transfer speeds for mobile network of up to 21 megabit per second burst speed. This compares favourably to the maximum ADSL broadband speeds currently available in many rural and remote and some urban areas. The Next-G network is also faster than other Australian 3G networks. For example, Optus's 3G HSPA network has typical speeds of between 512 kilobits per second and 1.5 megabits per second and has a theoretical maximum speed of 3.6 megabits per second. A somewhat misleading comparison between the two telecommunications providers. Telstra is spruiking at speeds of 21 megabits per second, the unachievable maximum, versus Optus's typical achievement speeds of up to 1.5 megabits per second. And this is on the first few pages of the 61-page document. There's nothing like an even playing field when it comes to comparing horses for courses. But then again, we are talking Telstra here. One has to ask if Concept Economics is a division of the Telstra marketing department. In other telco news this week, Hutchison's 3 managed to lure some 5,000 disgruntled iPhone users away from the Telstra, Optus and Vodafone networks. Not bad for a company that doesn't sell Apple iconic mobile phones and who have also posted yet another loss of around $163 million for the full year to December 31st, 2008. It will be very interesting to see how 3 and Vodafone pair up, being the two biggest loss-generating telcos. And while we're on the subject of mobile phones, have you tried buying a handset that meets your requirements these days? Ever since the iPhone hit the market, it seems like the major manufacturers of handsets have dropped the ball. Very few handsets have emerged over the past year, and those that have been less than enticing. So what's going on? Is it the evolution of the netbook and iPhone that has brought about the demise of the humble mobile phone? Maybe demise is too strong a word, but seriously, try replacing your current handset with something that works for you. Maybe the manufacturers need a stimulus package as well.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam shares his thoughts on Telstra's Next-G upgrade. Sol Trujillo puts an ad in the Lost and Found column. Crooks out with the police with GPS navigation. Microsoft join us live on the program tonight to talk about that odd spot. And Choice, an Australian consumer protection group, wants a code of practice to be introduced to protect users from rogue ringtones. First up, though, here's the latest happenings in the world of technology with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, a red-faced Facebook withdraws new controversial terms of use. Sol Trujillo sparks a Microsoft security scare. The ACCC takes action against overseas ringtone scams. Google wins a Street View privacy case. And casinos ban a card-counting iPhone application. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Social networking juggernaut Facebook has been forced to withdraw its newly implemented terms of use after a worldwide backlash over changes to its information privacy conditions. Facebook changed its terms of use on the 4th of February, which many speculated allowed Facebook to retain intellectual property rights over any uploaded content, including text, photos and audio, even after a user had deleted their account. But Facebook CEO Mr. Mark Zuckerberg said the changes were only made to make the site's policies clearer to users. Mr. Zuckerberg said that the clause stating that Facebook could use user information even after they'd deleted their account was meant to ensure messages left on friends' Facebook pages would not disappear. Facebook's chief privacy officer, Mr. Chris Kelly, said that Facebook only rolled back to the former terms of service last week to make it clear that the site's intention was not to own users' information. In a statement posted on the Facebook blog, the company said, "We never intended to claim ownership over people's content, even though that's what it seems like to many people. This was a mistake, and we apologise for the confusion." Telstra's chief executive officer, Mr. Sol Trujillo, last week sparked a major security scare for Microsoft when it was revealed he had lost a loan phone running a pre-release of a new Windows operating system. The phone, which Trujillo had given to another Telstra executive, was an HTC model loaded with Microsoft's top-secret Windows Mobile 6.5, not due for release until the end of 2009. The executive was carrying the phone in Spain at the time of the theft. The incident could have serious implications for Microsoft, as details of new features, and even bugs, could be seized upon by competitors in the smartphone product space, like Apple and Google. A Microsoft spokesperson said that while they regret the prototype had been misplaced, they didn't envisage the loss of one phone in Barcelona would impact Microsoft in any way. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has launched legal action against two overseas companies allegedly targeting local subscribers with mobile phone ringtone scams. The companies have promoted services in local magazines, and the ACCC is alleging that they failed to properly disclose the true costs of services. An ACCC spokesperson said that while many users formed a belief they were purchasing a one-off ringtone or mobile phone wallpaper, they were actually signing up to a subscription service which could cost up to $40 a month. Mr. Gordon Renouf is the Director of Policy and Campaigns with consumer advocacy group Choice. Mr. Renouf explains that this type of misleading marketing is a common problem.
Well, there's a lot of tricky marketing out there suggesting you're going to get something for free or to get a one-off thing, and yet the result is that you're signed up to a subscription service where you typically get something a couple of times a week at about $5 or $6.60 a pop.
Mr. Renouf spoke on government radio last week and explained that there needed to be better legislation in place to protect consumers.
There needs to be a double opt-in system so that when you dial a number saying, "I want to get a service," you get a message back saying, "This is a subscription service, it's going to cost you so many dollars per item, you're going to get so many items per week." So you actually understand what you're signing up for.
The phone industry's peak body, the Communications Alliance, will be launching a new code of conduct in the next few weeks designed to better protect consumers from these types of scams. Google has won a civil action in a United States court in which the company was accused of invading a couple's privacy by publishing photographs of their house on the popular mapping system Google Street View. The federal judge found that Google had no case to answer, rejecting the plaintiff's claims that Google had unjustly enriched itself by profiting from the photo of the couple's property. The judge indicated that the claim failed to meet a legal standard of highly offensive to an ordinary reasonable person, and that there was no convincing proof the couple was harmed by the Street View picture. Google uses cars equipped with cameras to take 360-degree images, which are incorporated into Google Maps, providing users with a realistic ground-level view of a street or locality. Google argued in court that an expectation of privacy concerning pictures of houses or yards was unrealistic in this age of aerial and satellite imagery. And the LA Times reports that casinos in the United States are on the lookout for punters wielding iPhones. A new card counting application, which costs just $3.99 US, allows users to easily operate an electronic card counter with the phone concealed in a pocket. By simply pressing the right half of the screen when a card appears valued at 10 or higher, or pressing the left half when a low card is flipped, the iPhone can warn you when it's time to place a big bet. The Nevada Gaming Control Board has warned iPhone entrepreneurs that while card counting is not illegal, using a device that does count cards is. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
A couple of satellites had a bit of a faux pas in space during the course of the week.
That's one way to put it.
What tracks space junk?
NASA do.
Do they?
Yeah. It's not designed to be robust. It's designed to be an add-on sort of convenience factor.
And we trashed their house on the 21st party the other night.
That really shouldn't happen.
I know, but it did.
One guy just got a bunch of electrodes and he got his favourite music track and he stuck the electrodes to his face.
Oh dear.
He's got the...
The Nine Network has truly embraced the concept of catch-up television.
I watched it without commercials in it.
What do you do in the case where you lose base sites like that?
We have a field communications vehicle and we have a couple of multi-skillable vehicles that can be used.
There is a lot of frustration in the community.
Our cat votes for global warming. Sits out there and suns itself saying, this global warming's great.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me is the ever reliable regular here every week, Graham Callaghan. Good evening, Graham. How are you?
Good evening, Andrew. I'm very well.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. We've got fires here again tonight. It's just on for young and old again up in the hills, not far away from us here. So
there's several fires going around the place. Yeah, particularly watching the one up in Upway. Yeah, not too far up the road, and there's some friends of Tech Talk Radio in the line of fire up there that our thoughts are with them.
Even on the chat tonight, there's people that are listening, watching us on the chat, but listening to another radio station for their essential services update and things like that.
Don't mind mentioning which station that is. If you're in the line of the fire, listen to your local ABC. That's where you're going to get the information.
And I had a phone call today from a customer in Queensland saying that it's so wet up there that they've never seen anything like it. Yet down here, where we are,
so dry, we haven't seen anything like it.
Absolutely. Anyway, interesting week in technology. Oh, hang on. Who's this guy next to you? Next to you there, Graham?
I don't know. I haven't seen him before.
Hello!
I remember you. You used to be here regularly.
I did. How are you all?
Yeah, you blew in for that night. We had the big blackout, and you blew in for a couple of minutes there, and then we hadn't seen you again since.
I haven't done a complete tech talk for months. It's been terrible, but it's good to be back, though.
Yeah, well, you've got 2 hours to go, so you never know what... Well, hour 45 now, so you never know what might happen. So.
You never know what might happen. The show's been sounding good. You guys have been doing a great job holding the fort while the rest of us have been otherwise engaged.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
Pretty good show. I was going to sit home and have a listen to the first bit tonight and then put Underbelly on when it came on. And
I was hoping, did you download it off the Channel 9 website?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. That was very interesting, especially last week with Adam talking about watching the live shows. Well,
sorry about that.
What was that? Someone's laptop's just gone off.
But they're doing that now. You can watch shows which have been broadcast. Like the next day, they're making them available. So
good. Now, there's a camera on the wall in the studio this evening, Dr. Ron. You've apparently, this is a new trend. Whenever you're in, seldomly, you bring the camera in and it pops up there on Ustream.
That's a bit scary, isn't it? www.ustream.tv/techtalkradioau. I'm about to hit the start broadcast button, so bear with me while we're talking and doing everything and actually putting a radio show to air live. I'll be doing that
as well. So let me see how you multitask. What have you been doing the last couple of weeks?
Well, it's a very good question. Had some professional commitments and some personal commitments, but back on board this week, so it's good to be back.
Fantastic. How's your technology been holding up with all the heat and all that sort of stuff?
It's been going
okay. Things haven't melted?
Okay. Things haven't melted too badly. I've had some dilemmas of recent times. Three things that have been driving me crazy over the last couple of weeks I thought I'd share with you very quickly. The first thing is a little bit geeky. Xorg.conf hell I've been in. Graham might know what that is.
That's a Linux thing, is it?
It is a Linux thing.
You were mentioning something. You were cursing this Thunderbird mailer system.
That's the second thing.
Okay, we'll go to the first thing first.
First thing first, xorg.conf. That's a file if you use Ubuntu systems or Linux-based systems that controls your desktop and your screen resolution and...
Yeah,
all those settings.
Any Linux or Unix-based system that uses X Windows as its display. If you've got a graphical user interface on that type of system, it'll be what you're using.
Exactly. Now, I did something really dumb, and that's all I know.
I was just thinking you must have need to be playing with that file.
I don't know what I did, but I've got a nice big 20-inch CRT monitor at home that sits on this particular computer, and the best I could do was run it in 640 by 480, which is...
Ouch.
Yeah, not very good at all. So I was running wizards and reconfiguring things and trying to modify things. In the end, don't try this at home, kids, I just ended up deleting xorg.conf, and I rebooted, and it's really good now. It's let me set to whatever resolution I want it to set to. Seems to have written a new one somewhere else in my profile. I didn't know it would do that, but...
Or it found another one somewhere
maybe
else.
Maybe it's found another one. It's fixed the problem, though. But
maybe that was the problem. You had a clash of X or whatever files you had.
Xorg.conf. Yeah.
See, that traditionally confuses computers. If you actually have two files giving it conflicting instructions, they tend to fall over.
I can understand that. I can understand the confusion. I can understand everybody else's confusion. But don't despair. If you've got a problem like that, send us an email or post a forum post, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, and one of us or between the three of us will work something out and give you some advice. Whether it helps or not is another matter, but we'll see.
Warlock saying on the chat that Xorg can drive you up the wall, so obviously it has.
It can and did. Okay, no. just delete it. That's my advice now.
Can also get you out of trouble. You know, if you've got a monitor that runs a strange resolution or something, you do some little hacking in there and you can get your monitor to do what you want.
You can.
Which, can get Windows to run on some current monitor models I'm trying to use, but yeah.
This sounds like certain files in the Windows operating system that you don't go near, like boot.ini and netloader and all those sort of things.
It's exactly that. It's an initialization file, which you wouldn't normally edit manually, but this is what I had to resort to. The second thing that was driving me crazy, Andrew and Graham, Thunderbird, messages disappearing. Mozilla people, what's going on? Fix this problem. There is so much discussion about it on the internet where messages just disappear and they say, oh yeah, delete the .msf files and delete your folder index files and they'll all come back.
I thought that was only an Outlook feature.
No, they don't all just come back. It's crazy. This product's supposed to be actually in production now, and it's version 2.something. It's been released for years. I don't understand why they've got such a fundamental problem with the way they handle their databases.
I'd rather like it if they could make some of my email messages disappear.
Graham, I ended up, all my subfolders, they all stayed intact and they were okay, but my
actual... Yeah, because they're in separate physical files.
Exactly, but all the messages that were in my inbox, about 100 messages, just vanished. Now, I've still got the inbox file. It's about 5 or 7 meg in file size.
Yeah.
Thunderbird still tells me there is nothing in that file.
You can read that file. You can open that up in a normal editor and have a look and see what's in it.
I've opened it up in a text editor using Nano, which is a Linux-based text editor, and that says that it's empty as well. So I don't know what's going on.
So it's lots and lots of empty space, lots and zeros.
Exactly.
And you're not Robinson Crusoe, from my understanding. There's lots of other people out there having the same problem.
I almost reverted. This is the closest I've ever come to reverting to Outlook. I was about to give it all away, but. Thunderbird
users.
So
what's happened? Are you getting mail now? You're losing any? You don't know?
I'm persevering with Thunderbird. I'm not losing any more.
Have they got a box which you can tick that says leave the mail on the server while you debug this?
Yes, Thunderbird does have such a box. But what I would do in your situation is I would copy that file or rename that file. You know, make sure Thunderbird's not running at the time.
Which I've backed it up, yep.
Yeah, rename it to just another name, so call it old inbox or something.
Yep.
Thunderbird, when you launch it, will create a new inbox file, which will be 0 bytes in size.
Yep.
And you can carry on from there. And that way, at least, you're not putting your new mail into a possibly corrupt format.
That might be a good idea. I might have a look at doing that.
I would definitely recommend doing that. And otherwise, it's very good practice in general, this whether you're using Outlook or Thunderbird or anything else, to keep your inbox small. Mm. Move messages out of your inbox as soon as you can. Because the inbox is where things are going to happen, both good and bad. So, you know, if a bad message comes in or if something gets corrupt, it's likely to happen to your inbox because that's what lots of different things are writing to all at once.
This is what happened to me, Graham. I think I had too many large file attachments on messages and it spat the
dummy. There are physical limits. Like, you know, if your inbox gets to 2 gig or 4 gig, depending on what your operating system limits are, you can you can run out of access to it, and that can be really bad.
Mm.
Very good.
So that's Thunderbird. Third and final thing was my trusty Sony Ericsson W850.
Oh,
has been put on the shelf. It's developed an annoying fault.
Has it?
Yeah.
Are we going to get to the rundown tonight? Off you go.
No. Stay running. I've got 3 weeks worth of
I see you're actually holding a phone, which I think Noah had when he was a lad.
This is the one I had before the 850. This is a Sony Ericsson Z800i. No,
there's nothing wrong with those.
I'll hold up to the camera when I get the camera going in a minute. But I almost replaced it. Almost replaced it with a BlackBerry Bold.
Really? I thought you were looking at the HTC device.
That's what I'm looking at now, the Google Android phone.
Yeah.
I've got to either go with Optus or I've got to buy it outright from somewhere like Organizer World are selling them unlocked. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to find somewhere where they're selling them unlocked, I think. But I need to have a play with
What frequency bands do they have?
It's an AM, FM, that sort of stuff, yeah. Antique modulation, future modulation.
That's a joke.
It supports HSDPA.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it supports all of the good bands that we're interested in here.
Including 850?
I believe so. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it does.
Three Mobile not keen on the HTC Dream. This is the phone that you're speaking of, Dr. Ron.
Yes.
Three Mobile has passed over.
Oh, they're not long for this world anyway.
Adding HTC's Android-based Dream handset to its range.
They've been followed by red people.
Yes. Anyway, apparently they said, Nigel Dawes, the CEO, said, no, it's not the mobile's cup of tea. Well, I don't know what is. I suspect probably because it's got a big screen on it. Because if you've ever put a handset, which is not a 3 handset, on the 3 network, everything's very small. So,
okay,
maybe that's part and parcel of it, but I don't know. But yeah, 3 aren't very happy about it. But yeah, I don't know what's going on with 3. I got an email from them today, a junk mail type email, and they had a picture of a telemarketer on there. Wasn't Indian. I don't know what's going on there.
Did you pin it up on the dartboard or?
No, deleted it.
Oh, fair.
I wasn't running Firefox. What's Thunderbird? I had to do it manually. So
Yeah, you had to delete it manually.
You have that automated delete feature enabled.
That's really good.
Yeah, great.
Anyway, there's lots of other interesting things to talk about tonight, but just briefly, Dr. Ron, have you made a decision yet on the new handset?
No, not yet. Okay. I'm going to go and have a play with a new HTC one. I had a play with the BlackBerry Bold, and I was all a bit revved up and a bit excited about it, and I had a play with it, and the interface is very, very nice, but me with my fat thumbs, I put my thumb on the keypad and my thumb would cover about 4 or 5 buttons in one go. And I was a little bit concerned. It was better than I thought it would be, but I was still a bit concerned that if I was in a hurry or trying to do it one-handed, I wouldn't be able to accurately text or do anything.
BlackBerry users I've spoken to say that this appears to be a problem, but once you start using it, all you do is you aim for the button that you just sort of mentally aim for the right button, and somehow the design is right and you hit the right button anyway.
I've got a BlackBerry user in the office.
Yeah.
And I've seen the BlackBerry. It looks very impressive, but I can relate to what Dr. Ron is saying with the smallish sort of buttons these days. I guess that's why you really go for a notebook. I think we're starting to see this area where laptops are too big. And we've now got smaller ones, which are like the notebooks, which Dr. Ron's is on the table
there. Netbooks, yeah.
Yeah, netbooks.
Yeah,
and then you go back to phones. So maybe phones are going to go back to being phones again.
Well,
with
maybe
email receptacles in them or something. I don't know. But anyway, lots to talk about there, because there's nothing out there on the market. I've got to replace a handset, and you get a choice of these new touchscreeny Fandangle things. Or just strange things.
Well, I noticed that Telstra are pushing the E51 Nokia, which is the one I bought, which is it's got lots of nice features and web browsing and so on, but it hasn't got the QWERTY keyboard, so it's a much smaller phone. It's quite a nice sort of size and shape, fairly comfortable. So,
you happy with it?
I am. It's got some quirks. It's got some things that drive me up the wall, but any phone will have. Overall, it seems to work reasonably well.
I've got a cheap mobile, which I'm trying to offload at the moment. It's got, it used to have Windows Mobile 6.5 on it.
Oh, no thanks.
Found it in Spain.
Oh, that one. Oh, the new one. Ah.
Yeah.
Have you found it, have you?
Oh, I bought it on eBay.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you get a good deal?
Yeah.
Windows 6.5, how's that?
Used once
Windows
only.
Mobile 6.5, I should say.
It's funny, actually. If you haven't worked out, we're talking about Sol Trujillo, the CEO of Telstra, had his phone nicked during the...
And not just any phone, though. It was a prototype phone with the new Microsoft Windows 6.5 Windows Mobile operating system on it, which has not yet been released, and nobody has seen, or virtually nobody has seen, except a few high-flying sort of telco executive types.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
Like Sol Trujillo used to be.
There's a new feature in Windows 6.5. What do you mean used to be? Do you know something we don't?
Well,
since his fall from grace.
He might be persona non grata down at Microsoft at the moment.
We'll get Grace on.
Yes, Grace is due later on. She's Grace from Microsoft. Hopefully we'll manage to make contact if all things go according to plan this evening. Apropos of Sol Trujillo's little mishap. Yeah, well, maybe that's it. Maybe he's not coming back. Maybe he's in Spain and they'll just call it quits. It's closer to go back to the States from here.
It's been done before.
Just go straight from Spain to the States.
We'll stay in Spain.
Absolutely. There is a list floating around too at the moment of the top 10 potential candidates to replace Sol when his contract expires in the middle of this year.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, anyway, he'll take his money and go. But back to this new device. There's a feature in Windows Mobile 6.5, which is akin to Apple's Control-Alt-Delete function, which if you put something on your iPhone that you're not supposed to have, they can delete it with the big black button in Cupertino. Did you know?
Yeah,
well, apparently this version of Windows 6.5, a bit Maxwell Smartish, actually.
It is.
It had a self-destruct button built into it, and they could delete it, delete everything on the phone remotely.
Fantastic.
So apparently
they've obviously foreseen this sort of situation occurring, and they've put this feature in.
Yeah.
Just such an eventuality.
Yeah. Pity they haven't worked out how to put a self-destruct, so the phone explodes or something like that in some poor unsuspecting soul's pocket.
Oh.
Soul? Oh,
some
sorry,
poor unsuspecting soul.
There's a Freudian slip, really, isn't it? And, yeah, end up...
It might be a little harsh.
It might. End up in hospital or something. But anyway, there you go, a hidden feature of the new Windows Mobile 6.5, which... Yes, has been deleted. Anyway, Sol, don't lose your mobile. Speak to us. We'll try and put you in touch with someone who can get you good.
You can have my Z800i when I replace
it. Hey, I've got one of those. They're good.
I know, they are good. It's been working quite well, all things considered. I had to hunt around for a day to find a battery charger, but got there in the end.
They're good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, while we're talking about mobile phones, ringtones.
Yeah, let's.
Choice, the Australian consumer advocate. I guess advocate is what they are. They produce all sorts of reports in pertaining to goods and services that as a consumer you would want to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Independent. What they do is, let's take washing machines or mobile phones or any white good, for example. They actually buy them out of their own funds, test them, put them through the ringers, and then report on them to the general public. Now, these guys have basically come up and said, I think it's time that we had a mobile phone ringtone code of practice.
Right, right.
Now, when I first heard about this, I thought, oh, this is hilarious, because how many ringtones have you heard on the train that you go, what the hell is that? And all sorts of things. I thought maybe someone's cutting down with it. But anyway, according to news.com.au, annoying mobile ringtones should be governed by a code of practice. Choice launched a scathing attack on mobile services, including ringtones, wallpapers and horoscopes, after a new concern from industry watchdog, the ACCC. And the ACCC claims sections of the phone industry are continuing to engage in poor practices such as distracting visuals, hard-to-read fine print, and confusing contracts that can frustrate and misleading consumers.
Mm.
Now, this is a broad-brush approach in the industry. If you've ever turned the television on commercial television, well, it's applicable here in Melbourne, and I'm sure it is, as it is in Sydney, Brisbane, and all other major cities, yeah, probably everywhere in the country, you get those really weird television commercials that come on promoting partner trackers, and they're all silly. They don't work. If you're silly enough and gullible enough to pay $12 a week for something that doesn't work, well, more for you.
Well, the gentleman from Choice said that some people are actually paying up to $40 a month in subscriptions. I actually thought it would be a lot worse than that. I thought they might have been paying $400 a month.
That's what I'm saying, $12 a week for something that doesn't work, and yet you're getting, you know, what's that other thing? There's that creature says, I kill you. That, you know.
Oh, yes.
I've seen that ad on the telly.
The dead terrorist.
That's him,
yeah.
Which started off with as a situation comedy type sort of thing on American television. But, you know, there's one that I saw last night, heaven forbid, that undresses people in the viewfinder of your camera. Oh, you've got to be kidding. But this is what people are going spending the money on. Anyway, as Choice rightly say, and the ACCC, maybe it's time to get some of the sharks out of the water. Because don't forget, Adam was a recipient of an expensive phone bill based on recycling a mobile phone number.
Yes, that's right.
So as soon as you cancel your account, that's it. You're obviously free of all commitments of things that you've subscribed to, but the poor person that gets that number next, whoa, watch out.
Because he picked up a previously used mobile phone number which had those subscriptions in place, didn't he?
He did.
And then without his knowledge, he suddenly started using that telephone service. And he was already subscribed, unbeknownst to him, and he started getting billed for it.
Well, was he getting the... No, he was getting text to a mobile broadband service, which obviously you don't get text unless you've got a bit of software that works for you.
Mm.
So, oh, well. Mm-mm. All right. So, watch your space, I guess, with mobile silly things, because there's plenty of them out there. Go make your own. They're a lot of fun. I've made some. They're good. We should do a Tech Talk one. That'd be fun.
What do you mean mobile silly things? Ringtones?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we could do a ringtone.
We could. Yeah. Put it up online for download. Anyway.
Oh, there's a thought.
There you go. TARDIS 3. The stream is on. Well done, Doctor. There you go. Accolades already coming in on the chat.
Yes, there we go.
There we are. We're on the webcam this evening if you're listening to us live.
If you're listening to us live, yes, ustream.tv/techtalkradioau. If you're not listening live, that's okay. Go there as well and you'll see a recording.
Oh, does it record it too, does it?
It does. It's a recording and it records sound and hi-fi video and audio and lots of good stuff.
Fantastic. Must have a look after the show. Teenagers.
You feature prominently.
It's held to the wall with gaffer tape. I'm pretty impressed, Dr. But it is pointing over the side of the table tonight.
It is.
Teenagers worried about iPods and hearing loss still listen to music too loudly, according to a study. Yeah. Have you take your iPod
what?
Ears? Take those white things out of your ears, Dr. Ron. Actually,
sorry.
They're black.
They are.
Allegedly, teenagers are liking the music cranked up. despite knowing the fact that they should turn them down to save their hearing. A US-based study has found
that... I haven't got an earring. Sorry,
Graham. Lame jokes tonight. He's been off air for a while, Graham. Can you tell?
Yeah. He's stored up a few too many of those lame jokes. We'll have to try and get them out of him during the break.
Get that book out of his pocket. He's been writing them down as he goes along.
Sorry.
The US-based study found up to a quarter of iPod users have listening habits that can damage their hearing, while teens who voice the most concern about hearing loss often play their music the loudest. Mm. And it's true. If you have your earphones on and you got it cranked up a bit too much, when I was at school, I did all this sound stuff. If you have that ringing in your ear, you know that ringing that you hear if you've been to a really loud concert or you've been exposed to a lot of noise, that's damage. Once you hear that, you've done damage.
It's called tinnitus.
Tinnitus?
Yes.
So that was what you got between your toes.
I was going to say, can you get a cream for that?
No, that's something altogether different, Graham.
Athlete's foot, if I thought.
No. You know what, tinnitus between your toes?
That'd be bad.
Yeah.
But some music has to be loud. Some music needs to be played loud.
You can have music loud, and this is my argument in our household, you can have music loud, but don't have it so loud that it hurts. Right. You need to have it loud enough so that you can feel the music. You need to feel music.
That's right.
But anyway, so...
But if you have long, prolonged sessions of listening to very loud music, and you come away with your ears ringing, as Andrew said, it does mean that you've done some damage to your hearing.
Yeah. Hmm.
What?
Exactly.
little hair things in your inner ear.
Yeah, I don't know what
they're
called.
They never come back.
JD would know because he's a medico.
Who?
That's right. JD would know.
Okay. Who's JD?
Who's not here tonight.
Another former panelist.
Oh, another former panelist.
The panelist formerly known as.
Well, would be here if it weren't for those things up the bush.
Yes,
probably. Yes, so, anyway, JD, and all of our CFA guys doing a fantastic job out there. Yes, wouldn't want to be there.
Drop us a line, though, if you're listening, JD.
Yeah, let us know you're still with us. That'd be good. I did get an email from him about 3 or 4 weeks back saying, g'day, I won't be in next week because, and haven't heard from him since.
He probably hasn't stopped since.
Yeah, exactly right. Mm. All right, we should move on. We've got some all sorts of interesting things coming up. After the break, we're going to have a listen to Adam Turner. He's actually... on assignment at the moment. He lodged an audio piece, which we'll play later on, from up north. He's in Queensland with the rain.
Did he file it via his satellite phone?
He filed it by something. He filed it twice.
Oh, good.
Two versions of one thing. Which one do I use? So, we'll have a bit of a listen. He was... hang on, I'm just trying to find it. I did the Media Connect Kickstart Conference in Queensland.
Oh, right.
Which is on. It's a three-day love fest for those techno... people who, you know, journalists who get up there and do all that sort of stuff. So
very good.
Amongst the view from the couch, we'll also hear from Adam when it comes to that. So, and then after that, hopefully, fingers crossed, technology will work for us and we'll have a chat to Grace from Microsoft about that odd spot that we had in the Melbourne Age not so long ago, which Graham read out last week. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, it was about people proposing via mobile phone.
It was.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of surveys out, and I've got another survey.
I wish I'd known I could have got away with a text message. A lot cheaper and easier.
Only 11% of women approved, though. So
But you know,
I'm not convinced that your lovely wife would have been one of them.
You know, my lovely
I'll
wife.
I'll pull the fader down about now, shall I?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
From which angle do we attack?
You've got a Black Monday fear for malware spike.
That forum user has been executed with extreme prejudice.
Fly on the wall material on Tech Talk Radio.
Expletives, I suspect.
I don't need my internet filter.
Dr. Ron's test tube aliens.
I think he's had a few.
Big deal.
There's all sorts of interesting things in there too.
Entertaining.
Wife acceptability factor.
WAF.
The WAF.
Informative.
Digital certificates as well.
Independent.
I reckon Adam might have something to say about it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That's for your iPod, sweetheart.
She said, what's an iPod?
Twitter? We do. Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That you are. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Three of us in this evening, Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham, and Dr. Ron, and me, Dr. Andrew.
That was four.
That's four. Yeah. That's a trick question. Hey, you've got some correspondence that needs to be entered into there, Dr. Ron.
I do. We have a new forum user.
Really? What's cool? I haven't caught up with the forum for some time.
The forum's going great guns. Forum.
Fantastic.
TikTokRadio.com.au. Hello to Natasha. Natasha says, hi, I've been listening to your podcast for a year now and decided to join this forum. About time, Natasha. TikTok Radio is the best tech podcast in Australia. Well, that's a big call.
Thank you, Natasha. We'll send you the check.
My favourite segments are Adam's View from the Couch and Website of the Week.
Oh, really? Someone does listen to our Website of the Week.
There you go, yeah.
Thanks, Natasha. Marky Mark says, so glad you guys are back. I've been having withdrawal symptoms because we're off over summer and everything.
It was great. Dr. Ron stayed off too.
Yeah, it was even better.
he's had 12 weeks. We only had 8.
I've had a big break. I've had a go at Google Latitude on my Nokia, and I think it's great, says Marky Mark.
I can't get it to work here. It comes up in iTunes and says it's not available in your area.
Funny you should say that. I had it working, and I had friends who had added me, and I could manually update my location. But suddenly, iGoogle is telling me that it's no longer available in my location.
I've got it working beautifully on my phone, on my A51.
Have you got it working so it's automated?
Well, no, because I've chosen not to.
Ah, but you can, and it will work if you do?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, how accurate like it is it? How far off are you on the mark from where you are and where it thinks you are?
Seems to get me within about 100 metres.
Oh, that's all right. So you
won't
know you're in the next cubicle.
Yeah, good enough to know. Yeah, that's right. Good enough to know vaguely what area I'm in, but not enough to actually and tap on the shoulder.
You want to know what I'm talking about? Listen to The View from the Couch, which is also available via an RSS feed too.
It is.
You can go to Adam's site, which is adamturner.com.au, or you can come to our site, techtalkradio.com.au, and subscribe to all these great links and feeds like Natasha has.
So, Marky Mark, the answer is, it was working for me and it stopped working. It is working for Graham. It looks like they might still be testing and playing around with it a little bit.
Well, that's everything with Google. Everything's beta with them, isn't it?
It might depend more on your device than your than the area too. It might be that it works. They've got it for some platforms and not others.
Maybe. And the other bit of correspondence to enter into is from popular tech blog Lifehacker comes the following post, which was brought to my attention by technology journalist Angus Kidman of Bran podcast fame. A lot of people know Angus Kidman and his podcast. While Australian users of Twitter can send updates via SMS if they're prepared to pay for a text, there's currently no option of receiving them. We've talked about this in the past. However, in a post discussing a recent deal allowing Twitter updates to be by Canadian users, Twitter has promised that Australia is in the running for a similar service. In their blog post, they said, stay tuned for more support all over the globe as we make progress. And fear not, Australia, you're on the list too. It's very exciting.
About time, too, is all I can say.
Mm.
Look, I wrote a fairly interesting blog on my blog, McBlog, which drew some interesting feedback, and lots of viewers came and had a read. I haven't seen stats like it, actually, just in relation to Twitter and what it could have been for the fires. And, combine that with what the essential services are potentially proposing here, which has been tested and, unfortunately, a little bit late rolled out for some. It's got merit, I think. It may not be the ants' pants, but at the end of the day, it's better than nothing.
Indeed. Now, there's a carrier called Bell Mobility, and they've got on board in Canada, and they've made the whole Twittering and SMS thing possible. So they're going to need to look at doing something like that here with a local carrier to subsidise the text messages. But hopefully, they're trying to negotiate with somebody at the moment to enable that.
Fingers crossed.
Indeed.
That'd be really good.
Yep. Thank you for all your feedback, everybody. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if you've got a message, good or bad, to send us, and we'll read it out on air. And
you don't be too long. The ones that are really long, you can't paraphrase them.
Oh,
some people go into great details.
I thought you meant don't take too long because our operators are standing by.
No.
Don't make it too long.
Like, I've got an email here from GD, who's not with us tonight. His kids have chewed up all his bandwidth again, and as a result, he's got to listen on the radio.
Well, GD's messages are always nice and straight to the point, usually, aren't they?
Well, have
you got an exception there?
So, Exhibit A, as I hold up to the webcam, here is Exhibit A. It's across two A4 pieces of paper.
Oh, Thunderbird deleted that for me, I think.
It's not worth reading out on the radio, apart from I thought you'd find this interesting, GD. So there you go. but in all respect, thanks for people sending that in. This was an email that had been passed on to him so far in respect to campaign against the government's mandatory internet filtering.
Oh, yeah, that's all still going on for some reason.
Well, did you see the press release that that our illustrious minister released today, which I haven't printed out? I did tweet it, but go and have a look on the tweet. TTR.2008 and scroll down in today's and you'll see it there. But I think he's softening the blow because he's announcing new research and funds or grants into monitoring cyber safety type sort of things, as if this is, the internet filter didn't quite work and so we're going to do this instead.
Right.
I'm just cynical. I've got my cynicism hat on at the moment and conspiracy theories and all that sort of stuff. So maybe there'll be something announcement coming through there shortly. By the way, last week, I think Graham and I were talking about if you're a subscriber with one of the companies who are partaking in the internet filter, have you opted in? We haven't heard from anybody. Maybe they haven't turned it on yet.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure.
Because I think you said it had to be an opt-in thing. If anyone's opted in and tried it, it'd be really good to see what...
Definitely.
See how slow your internet's going.
Yep. Anyone who's had any contact from their ISP with actually being part of the trial, we want to hear about it.
And there were about six ISPs, Graham. And none of the main ones. Week.
Yep. The biggest one was it iPromise?
Someone like that.
Yeah, it was the only name I recognised. Yeah.
The iNets who put their hand up, say, yeah, we'll be in it, but it won't work. You know, they just got overlooked in this instance, so...
I've got a nasty iPrimus rant for later on too.
Have you?
Yeah,
we've got lots to talk about.
We've got lots to talk about.
Let's go have a bit of a let's talk Telstra because we can view from the couch. Telstra last week, what was it earlier? Yeah, late last week, Sol Trujillo announced from his long range holiday that he's having over in Spain at the moment that next G had gone to 21 megabits per second. What does this mean to everyone? Well, not much really, because there's not a device on the market that can actually utilise anything about faster than about 7 megabits per second down. So,
and that's not the only issue.
No, there isn't. So let's just check out what Adam's got to say about Telstra and Next G.
Telstra's Next G wireless broadband has hit a theoretical speed of 21 megabits per second. But really, you'll be lucky to get 8. Even Telstra admits that users of its new 21 megabits per second mobile broadband service will generally only get 8 megabits per second. So when is someone going to be honest and rein in the marketroids? Telstra's marketing department is about to go into overdrive, spruiking these new NextG download speeds, which are available to Metro business users this week and consumers in April, although you'll need to buy a new modem. I'm sure the NextG advertising will be plastered with the phrase amazing 21 megabit per second download speeds, just as ADSL2 was advertised as an amazing 24 megabit per second service before the regulator stepped in to point out that no one would ever get 24 megabits per second from ADSL2 Plus, even if they lived next door to the exchange. At the NextG 21 megabits per second launch last week, even the demonstration in best possible real-world conditions only managed to crack 18 megabits per second. The audience was told the new network would generally offer users 550 kilobits per second to 8 megabits per second, after which they threw around the 8 megabit per second figure a lot. If you live outside the cities, you'd be lucky to get 3 megabits per second. Telstra's 7.2 megabits per second NextG service delivers roughly 4 megabits per second in real-world conditions, but the higher theoretical wireless speeds go, the more deceptive the numbers become. As for 21 megabits per second, when users will generally only get a third of that advertised speed, isn't it time for someone to call for a little honesty in advertising? I say what most NextG users need is pricing relief, not faster speeds. If people are going to pay through the nose for Telstra's expensive service, at least they should be honest about the kind of service they can expect. I'm also worried about Telstra's plans for a BlackBerry-style all-you-can-eat mobile email service. Telstra's recent track record on mobile email isn't great. Its consumer-grade MyConnect service offers customers a unified SMS, MMS email inbox, but it got off to a very rocky start when it was launched last year. The telco did a typically woeful job of migrating existing customers across to MyConnect, with little warning and no chance to opt out. The new service was slow and buggy, reeking of a half-baked product that was using its paying customers as unwilling beta testers. At launch, the service wasn't compatible with all Telstra phones, and at first, some users couldn't even get into their email at all. After using its consumer-grade customers as guinea pigs, you'd hope Telstra will treat its business-grade customers with a little more respect. I wouldn't want to place the reliability of my mobile email on such a hope. Signing up for Telstra's new all-you-can-eat business email locks you into one telco and one mobile platform, Windows Mobile 6.1. Neither Telstra nor Windows Mobile could exactly be classified as best of breed. If, on the other hand, you sign up with the mobile email specialist offering IMAP and or Exchange access, you've got the freedom to switch to any telco and almost any smartphone platform. If things went pear-shaped,
I strongly suspect you get better customer service from a dedicated email provider than from the Big T. If you try a third-party email service and you're not happy, or if you decide you want to change ISP or handsets, life will be much easier if you're with a dedicated provider. Third-party email providers know this. They live and die by the quality of their email service and support, whereas Telstra knows it's got you by the short and curly, so you're unlikely to churn even if the email service is woeful. Telstra doesn't want to just shunt bits and bytes. It knows the real money is in services. The question is, do you trust Telstra to offer a better service than a specialist? And more importantly, can you afford to be wrong?
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Can you afford to be wrong indeed? Thank you very much, Adam Turner. View from the couch, you can hear all of Adam's best ofs on the Tech Talk Radio website, techtalkradio.com.au. Click on the little picture of Adam there. If you're sick of seeing him on the Sydney Morning Herald and all the Age and Sydney Morning Herald sites, come and see him on our site. He looks exactly the same.
He's everywhere. He's everywhere.
He's clickable on our site. You can click his head.
Oh, really? What happens if you click his head?
Well, click it and find out.
Okay.
All right. Yes, in other mobile news at the moment too, Alcatel-Lucent and Ericsson, who are the people that sort of build the mobile, the back-end mobile technology stuff, are the world's first deployment of long-term LTE networks, a step closer to a reality after the US mobile operator Verizon Wireless announced that Alcatel and Ericsson as the initial vendors of its build, but the super quick wireless broadband technology is unlikely to appear in Australia at any time soon. So it looks like they're still developing all these great new whiz-bang technology type sort of things. And this is obviously wireless, because whatever happened to the big wireless thing? Remember Optus and that consortium that we're going to roll out high-speed broadband wirelessly, and it's just fizzled away. We haven't heard from them soon. I think Ericsson had something to do with that too.
Yeah, didn't it all get shelved, didn't it?
Yeah, because people didn't live up to their
That was going to be a WiMAX network through
that's the one, WiMAX. Well, this is Alcatel doing another wireless network, and they're going to team up with Verizon and do that.
Oh, good.
Hey, the Guinness Book of Records, Seoul managed to get into the Guinness Book of Records for the 21 megabit per second Next G network.
Oh, yes.
As the fastest network in the world. Yep. Telstra are also in the Guinness Book of Records for a lot of other things, which they're not going to own up to.
Products which cannot do what we say they can do.
I don't know. You'll have to go and have a look. But look, it's funny, isn't it? Spin is everything when it comes to a lot of these telcos. We're going to see a lot of spin coming out of Three and Vodafone very shortly when they merge. They're going to be upselling as best they can. And there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff that happens.
It's
going
to be very difficult for Vodafone to keep Three's customers loyal through a change. Well, yeah, I reckon so. Because I reckon the customers of Three are particular to Three. They've chosen Three because they get a very particular type of service, a very particular level of service, a very particular type of pricing. And, to move that into a bigger system they're going to have to tread carefully.
But Three is city-centric.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
In the spam that I got from them today, they say...
It's also very cheap.
Oh, yeah. Everything's horses for courses, really.
But that's true.
I think the thing that sells Three to a lot of people is the ability to call other people on the same network for free. Or for, you know, you get 300 minutes or 400 minutes, or in Dr. Ron's case, an infinite number of minutes to call people.
Other networks do similar deals, though. Other networks do similar deals,
but not
though.
To the extent that Three do, from my understanding. Mm. Like, I think Telstra can choose one number or something, but I could be wrong there.
They are city-centric as well, but I only ever really use my mobile telephone in the city. It's just how I live and how I work and how I operate, so it works well for me.
Oh, good. Yeah, it works well for me too. Warlock on the network, on the chat's just come back and said that they tested WiMAX and said it didn't work in Australia, so they canned it, though it works well in the US. This could be why Alcatel and Lucent and Ericsson are doing stuff.
That's sunspots down here, yeah. Global warming.
That'll be it.
We have no ozone anymore. It's gone.
Health and safety.
We've got very little bushland left either. It's all black.
Well, the way we're going...
Not good.
There's
speaking of
little things like that, the telcos apparently are studying the fire tragedy lessons. Telstra and Optus will conduct internal reviews and work closely with the Royal Commission investigating the Victorian bushfires to understand how telcos can improve the resilience of their networks when disaster strikes.
Yep.
I think that's a very admirable thing, but let's just take the perspective of what happened here in Victoria 2 weeks ago. people's alloy wheels on their cars melted into molten streams, which we saw on the television.
Yep.
On dirt, you could pick up someone's car tire. It was like dribbles of milk down the you know, kitchen bench. It was alloy from wheels.
Yeah.
What can withstand that? If a fire can do that, and that amount of...
Well, I think the question is, you're not going to expect that your mobile base stations individually are going to survive an event that's that bad. But the question is to design a network that the network can continue to function even if you lose individual base stations.
Well, that's true.
And the same thing's going to have to be investigated for the power companies and the other utilities. And, it's all going to come out. The Royal Commission's got massively wide terms. So all this stuff will be looked into, which is fantastic.
For those of you,
and there's going to be a lot of technology outcomes to watch from that.
I agree.
Not only in resilience of networks, but both communications networks and power networks and other things, but also in terms of warning systems and alert systems and ways of disseminating that vital information during a crisis as well.
Absolutely. For those of you who aren't aware, a Royal Commission is sort of like the biggest investigation you can have in this country. And there's been one, obviously, allocated by the Premier of Victoria, Mr. John Brumby, into the fires. So we'll see a lot from that. I guess one of the other interesting things, too, was not so much mobile infrastructure that was destroyed with the heat. It was also telephone exchanges because they're above ground. Under normal circumstances, what are the chances? Like, this was a 100-year fire, what people are saying. But we're going to see a fair bit more about that with the global warming that we've got.
That's the thing is, we've had lots of, one in 100-year events in the last 10 years. That's not a coincidence.
Queensland's having
one. We're going to have these more often.
New South Wales is underwater. It's not just us. We're burning. They're flooding. But you look at the things like the weakest link in a telephone network is obviously the bit that's protruding above the ground these days, whether it be a tower, whether it be a those liney pit things where they terminate. I can't think of the word for them. The little things that people run into in the pillars. Side of the street. Pillars. People run into in their cars and take out whole suburbs in one fell swoop. They're the weakest link in a phone network, and potentially that's what they need to look at.
I think Graeme's right. Hopefully they'll be able to look at the resilience of the network and find out what they can do, which is in a better way, so that if something like this does happen again, you have a less outage for less time.
Absolutely. Now, and I've got one little phrase of advice for people rebuilding after the fires and people rebuilding infrastructure after the fires, power infrastructure, telecommunications infrastructure. Put it underground.
Put it underground.
There you go.
Costs money, Graeme. Costs money.
But then again,
so does telecommunications infrastructures and SMS things.
But if you're going to have to rebuild it anyway, how much more costly is it going to be to dig a hole and put a roof over it than it is to build four walls and put a roof on that?
Of course, the thing that telecommunications and radio communications engineers have always faced is that to get radio signals around, you put everything you possibly can in the highest possible place.
Yep, and the fire rushes up the hill straight to it.
And what does fire do? It rushes uphill at a rapid rate of knots.
Yep, but mobile, that's in old days if you were using the old radio telephone system. But
these days we're
using cell systems. The cell systems don't go on the top of the hills. They go in the valleys and have restricted coverage to just that valley.
That's true. Yep, that's true.
It's a different line of attack.
Yep. We're going to take a break. When we come back, hopefully we'll be talking to Microsoft, Grace from Microsoft, about that wonderful SMS. That SMS survey thingy. Yeah.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
YouTube has gone widescreen at last. Hello?
How can any ISP stay in business?
You're not going to get fibre to the home, not for a long time.
An expensive exercise in stupidity from the outset.
The whole idea is you take out one node, the rest of the network keeps working.
Look, we can share, we can play nicely.
We have a huge problem on our hands, ladies and gentlemen.
Entertaining.
A billion Chinese dissidents can't be wrong.
Informative.
Do it post-paid, because then there's no surprises, is there?
Independent.
The government's in control of this country, not Telstra.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, someone.
Who's is that?
Steve Jobs just calling.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back, Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan in the studio this evening. It's lovely to see Dr. Ron again. I know we keep going on about it, but if we don't embellish the situation, chances are he might not come back next week or the week after.
I'd like to come back next week.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'd like to do it more than once a month.
Yeah, that'd be good. Bring JD with you as well, but yeah, it's been good.
I'll track him down.
Yeah. Now, whilst you were away, we had an odd spot of the week, which Graham read out last week, which I thought was really quite interesting.
It was very funny.
It was that people and SMSs and marriage proposals and the likes. Do you have the exact stats in front of you again, Graham?
Oh, I think it was that a survey found that 24% of Australian men believe it's acceptable to propose via a mobile phone.
Yeah.
So, and the surprising bit was that 11% of women also thought it was okay.
Fantastic.
But the other interesting thing was who did the survey.
It was Microsoft.
Microsoft did the survey. So why were Microsoft looking into this?
That's a very good question. Grace Kerrison, who is the director of Microsoft's mobile communications business in Australia.
Oh, if anyone will know, she'll
know. Is on the line. Are you there? Technology still with us?
Yes, I am, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Grace. So tell me, what was this survey all about?
Well, to be fair, as you said, you know, it was probably quite surprising for a lot of people to learn that Microsoft is doing this survey. The thing that's probably news to a lot of people, that a lot of the listeners, is that, you know, Microsoft does have Windows enabled phone in the market. So if you've heard of HTC or the Samsung Omnia or the HTC Diamond or the Palm Trio, those are all Windows mobile enabled phones. And you know, we did the survey to really assess the attitude and the behavior of mobile phone usage, especially in the smartphone, in the context of SMSing, IMing, occasions that mobile phones are used.
So, did anything surprise you? Obviously, you wanted to know a little bit about people's marriage proposal habits, and we've had some Gen Y people on the phone before, and of course, they live on SMSs and in chat rooms and instant messaging. How come you wanted to know about marriage proposals out of all things?
Well, actually, the survey presented a number of different types of questions, and, you know, it's just really finding out the different types of locations, you know, as far as how they use their phones, and now, Australians are very open to, you know, sharing, you know, what, you know, how or what they use their phones for.
Do you mean compared with the rest of the world?
Actually, across Asia Pacific, there's about 2,500 respondents across Australia, China, India, and Taiwan.
Well, that's a reasonable sample then for a survey of this kind.
For Asia, it is, and so you know, this survey basically showed us, you know, probably the more unconventional uses of phones. But, it, you know, this result shows us also how entrenched in all aspects of our lives mobile phones have become.
So what else, obviously you asked other questions, what else did you learn from the survey?
So, as you mentioned, you know, 48% of Australians use their phone in the loo, but we're not the highest.
Sorry, what was that? How many?
48%.
That was going to be my odd spot this week, Grace.
Using their phone in the loo, can you believe that?
We're
not the highest, though. It's 68% is the respondent from the Taiwanese.
I must admit, now that you mentioned it, I have actually managed to ring a colleague of mine at one stage. Can I call you back? I'm in the loo. And it's like, oh, my goodness, I didn't need to know that. But obviously, obviously it's a big thing. So, okay, so Australians like using their phone in the loo.
And as you mentioned, 24% of Australian males think it's acceptable to propose using their phones versus 11% of females.
Did you get a breakdown of, like, what they texted? Like, was bring beer, bring pizza, and by the way, will you marry me?
It wasn't that open of a survey. the other interesting thing is that, you know, people in Sydney, for example, are less likely to check their partner's SMS or caller list than people in Melbourne, who are about 52%.
So people in Melbourne are snoops, are they?
I'm just letting you know what came out of the survey.
Well, no, it's good.
Now back to the toilet humour, Grace.
I'm just to keep it on the level we're accustomed to.
I'm fascinated as to if you actually were able to break up the usage. So if you're on the toilet, did you actually find out what people consider to be using the phone, whether it's just talking or is it texting or is it surfing the web? Or did you go into that much detail?
No, we didn't go into that much detail on that aspect of it.
Oh, I think you should for the next one, because that'd interest me, because some people might send text messages and use the internet but not consider that to be actually using the phone if they're not talking to someone. I reckon it's more like 98%.
I could plead guilty to checking my emails whilst there.
Yeah.
well, the other thing that's interesting, which is actually tied to, you know, to the using the loo result, is 48% of Australians would actually wake up to answer a phone call or to yep. take a phone call. So it could be in the middle of the night, in the middle of an app, and if the phone rings, and I'm guilty of that as well, they would take that call.
Mm. We're talking to Grace Kerrison, who's the Director of Microsoft's Mobile Communications Business in Australia. Grace, why does Microsoft need to know this? You mentioned before that we're talking about handsets which Microsoft operating systems are run on. There's one less now. Sol has his, Nick, during the course of the week. But why does Microsoft need to know this information? Is this from a usability point of view with their software, or why?
Well, like I said, it was really just trying to understand how Australians use their phones today. And as well as trying to get an understanding of how well do Australians know about smartphones. So our survey actually indicated that of the 540-plus people who participated in the survey, that only 20% actually knew what a smartphone is. And this is really the category that, you know, where Windows Mobile Phone is prevalent in Australia today. There's a minimum of 45 different phones that's available through, you know, different telcos, different retailers that you can get that run Windows Mobile, which is really, you know, a mini PC in your pocket.
So are we going to see more of these smartphones coming onto the market? Is this where you're hedging your bets?
Oh, definitely. But if you could just imagine 10 years ago, we predominantly used our phones just to make phone calls. And the most important thing the most important information that you access is probably your contacts, your address book on your phone. And then there's SMS. And what you're seeing now is, you know, you admitted yourself, you're using it for email, for checking your email while you're on the go or on the loop. and more and more people, you know, with smartphones, like I said, being more like a mini PC, being more powerful, you know, there's video capabilities, there's movie capabilities. People take lots of pictures on their phones, and with Windows Mobile, because it's tightly integrated, you know, with your PC, it's just a matter of dragging and dropping different files and different applications back and forth. So it's quite easy to use, and it's really straightforward.
Grace, with Windows Mobile 6.5, we've heard about that recently in the news for some
that
good...
That was announced last week at the Mobile World Congress.
What can you tell us about it in terms of the release date, new features or improvements over 6.0, those sorts of things?
All that we're announcing at this point in time is that it will be released sometime in 2009. There will be, you know, we're always innovating with partners, as I mentioned, such as with HTC and Samsung and Sony Ericsson. So what you're seeing is probably more and more consumer-centric usability. So easy access to application, easy access to information, so at-a-glance type of information, lots of, one-touch type of functionality to access the content or the services that you need.
With my customers... a lot of small business customers and so on, they find that the one feature that they love getting between their Outlook folders and their smartphones is their calendar. Are there new features, new excitement in that particular area?
Actually, even with the current smartphones that we have in the market today, such as 6.1, the one aspect of the calendar that I always use is basically being able to change meetings, for example, when I'm running late. So when I'm on the go, I quickly change the meeting time to one where I'm going to be able to make it. And it automatically lets people know who are supposed to be in that meeting. So it avoids me having to do different types of phone calls, you know, while I'm in the car, for example, which we try to avoid.
Okay, So you would change the meeting from your phone in the car, and it would update all the people that have been invited to that meeting automatically, is it?
That's right.
And this is going to integrate...
Of course you don't do it while you're driving.
No. You'd pull over, but you'd only have to send one message rather than ring half a dozen people.
Exactly. Or the other thing, too, is, you know, in between meetings or when I'm, you know, when I'm at a cafe, if I need to basically set up a new meeting request and send it to different attendees, I can do that as well from my mobile phone.
From the mobile. Well, that's a good feature.
Exactly.
And presumably this is all going to integrate really well with products like Small Business Server 2008.
Actually, it is already.
Okay.
So if you got Small Business Server 2008, you have the Exchange functionality,
yep.
which means that all of the features as far as integration with Windows Mobile 6.5 is available with SBS 2008. You've already got that. If you've got that, you're ready to go, ready to be productive, and ready to really leverage your infrastructure that you already own.
Fantastic. I look forward to playing with it with some of my customers.
We actually need something like that here in where we are in Melbourne, because public transport's not too flash of them, especially when it gets hot down here. We just have no train. So it'd come in very handy for just bumping that meeting up without having to ring someone and say, I'm stuck on the train again. Grace, you've actually struck a chord with some of our listeners. I was just reading the chat there, which we have whilst the program's running. One of our listeners has owned up to checking Twitter whilst on the loo. So I think that's
well, there is tiny Twitter for Windows Mobile, so there you go.
Oh, look, need that.
There is. It's m.twitter.com. Is that the one, Grace? I think that's the one that I use when I'm on the loo.
Yeah, that's the one.
Goodness, Grace, you're bringing out all of our habits at the moment. It's just amazing how Australians open up when it comes to their habits and their mobile devices on the loo. I must admit, one other one which I've done too, which comes in very handy from time to time, is
careful
when you run out of loo paper.
Oh,
if you
careful.
Have you rung your partner to say, bring express delivery, please? But anyway.
It is amazing. I mean, there's over 18,000 different applications that's available on Windows Mobile today. So for anything that you want to do, there is an application for you.
It's amazing. Grace, thank you very much for sharing, I think, what to me has been a real eye-opener with Windows 6.5, and also the fact of what Australians are doing on there. There's nothing else you want to tell about the survey.
It just goes to show that Australians just don't like being out of touch, do they?
No, they take it to bed, they keep it under the pillow. I must admit, I get into trouble with my kids for leaving my phone on at night, because I've got a doorbell sound effect for my email when it comes in, and it just sounds like there's someone at the front door. But
when it comes to phones, actually, there are some statistics as well that we found out from the research, such as 55% of Australians, for example, rank functionality as the most important factor when choosing a phone, instead of price.
Really?
Exactly.
That's very encouraging, actually, isn't it?
Dr. Ron's in the market for trying to buy a new phone at the moment, and he's finding it frustrating. And I must admit, I find it frustrating too. I think we're sort of in this transitional phase between the old traditional phone and the new smartphones, and consumers just have to come to terms with what's now on offer, really.
Well, I'm telling you, the best phone, which I use and I love, is the Samsung i617T at Telstra. Why buy a feature phone when on a consumer plan at $30 a month, you can have a smartphone. You can have your email, you can have your calendars, you can have your contacts. If you've got Hotmail, for example, or Instant Messenger, you can have that on your phone as well.
So, sorry, which phone was that again? I missed the handset.
It's the Samsung i617T from Telstra.
Oh, okay.
And it's a very low cost at $30. $30 plan.
Oh, you know all the plans.
I've got that memorized. Would you like some more?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Yeah,
excellent.
Great.
So,
if you go to www.startdoingmore.com.au, you will have a view of all the phones that's here in Australia, and you'll be able to see little snippets of demonstrations as well on what you can do with your phone.
What was that, Grace? Give me more, was it?
No, www.startdoingmore.com.au.
Ah.
You can't do more when your phone runs Windows, see?
Grace, it's been absolutely wonderful. Just before we go, is there anything else from that survey that you did? Because you must have asked more than two questions that's come out.
Oh, no. I mean, we definitely asked a number of questions. But the one thing that is consistent across, I suppose, respondents in Asia-Pacific is that, for example, in Australia, 73% agreed that children under the age of 10 shouldn't be given a mobile phone.
Oh, I concur with that. I've got kids like that. Not unless they need one. It's like computer games and things like that. Oof. Anyway. Grace, thank you very much for spending some time with us this evening. And, yes, I wish you all the best with the mobile communication side of things with a company like Microsoft, because I can think it's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes by. So we're very grateful for your time this evening.
Thank you very much. Pleasure. Take care.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I want an Apple TV for Christmas.
Why? It doesn't do anything.
Well,
there's a thought.
A world of opportunity away.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I like my podcast, though.
802.11 ends. G's, B's.
You are where all this spam is coming from.
Sorry, that was a battery.
Thought you were losing your marbles.
Entertaining.
I don't have a bread knife that cuts through shoes.
That's what I
have. Informative.
5 gig on Telstra. Well, it's not even worth considering.
Independent.
That was a complete and utter debacle, but...
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, Stephen Conroy came out and...
Oh, good.
We'll give,
I'm sure he'll sort it out.
He'll fix everything. He's got it.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Nothing like doing Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron's just gone three rounds with our coffee machine here in the studio. He hasn't been here for a while. He said, where did this coffee machine come from? Anyway.
I think the coffee was a little bit stronger than
he's,
he was.
He's gone, it's a bit short, isn't it? And I said, well, you probably pushed the... I said, put hairs on your chest.
Yeah, I did.
I pushed the button. I can see them.
Oh. I pushed the button three times thinking, oh, the tide's out. This is something wrong with this coffee machine.
Yeah, you've got three macchiatos in one cup.
Three short blacks in one big cup, and I'm not going to sleep for a week. Just with one mouthful. Crikey.
Thank you, Grace. Thanks, Grace. That was good fun.
Now, for those that are wondering from before the break, the website that Grace was talking about is www.startdoingmore.com.au. It's a Microsoft Silverlight site. It gives you a range of what phones are available in the country and all, you know, from all the different carriers. And it just gives you an idea of the features and what's available and what the phones look like and what they can do.
Yeah, there's Optus stuff there. There's Three stuff there. There's Telstra stuff there.
So all the carriers are there.
Yeah, everyone's represented.
Yep, including the Samsung phone that she was talking about from Telstra right on the end, on the left-hand end. So,
Excellent. I like the sound of the little Twitter client. That'd be good because I'm a big fan of Twitter now. Social networking, poor. Give me Twitter anyway.
It's a small screen version, similar to ttr.mobi or any of the other, like m.google.com. If you go to m for Mike or m for mobile, .twitter.com.
Okay.
And it's a small screen formatted Twitter, and it works very well.
And that's if you want a little bit more than just being able to do an SMS update. You want to be able to see the website and all the rest of it. Yeah,
scroll through your timeline or whatever you want to do.
Oh, very good.
Excellent. All right. Upward and onward with other interesting things. Adam Turner, as I mentioned earlier on in the program, is up in Queensland at the moment, and he's at the Media Connect Kickstart Conference. There's a mouthful. Speaking of, sorry, I just saw Dr. Ron take a mouthful. You're watching on the webcam, you might have seen him just nearly pass out on the floor.
Strong stuff. Sorry, Adam Turner. What are we talking
about? Adam Turner, yes. Our regular here, who does all the correspondence to The Age and The Green Guide and the Sydney Morning Herald and IT, all those sorts of things. He's on a junket at the moment up in Queensland, and he caught up with a couple of interesting people. The first person we're going to hear from this evening is Ruslan Kogan. You remember him? He was the one who tried to bring the HTC phone into Australia before Optus.
Right.
Now, he brings in all sorts of interesting things, and Adam caught up with him up there in Queensland to try and find out a little bit about how and why he does things. So here's Adam's report that was filed only an hour or so ago.
I'm in Queensland this week at the Media Connect Kickstart Conference, basically a three-day technology briefing for the year where Australia's tech journos can meet with vendors face-to-face. One of today's more interesting speakers was Ruslan Kogan, founder of Australia's Kogan Technologies. Ruslan is attempting to take on the big boys in IT, selling his own brand of televisions and Blu-ray players, as well as working on a mobile phone running Google's Android operating system. Here's a taste of what Ruslan had to say today.
It's similar to the Dell business model. I think they've got a very, very good business model, but they've taken it back a few steps in the last few months by putting their products into Officeworks. They're cannibalising, you know, their own business and what made them successful and what gave them the price advantage. Mm-hmm. It's a similar business model. It's manufacture direct to consumer, cut out the middlemen, save everyone lots of money. It's all out there in the marketplace. For instance, Samsung had developed LCD technology, built a huge factory. They got to recoup some of the R&D costs. How are they going to do that? By selling Samsung LCD panels to other companies. What I do is I'd go to China and find all the different sizes and different brands and say, oh, 42-inch, here's a LG, here's a CMO, here's a 40-inch Sharp. Based on the costs, I think that's the best value for money one. Then the two other components in an LCD TV, like a tuner board, and power board's pretty generic, but tuner board will make the same decision. So recently, for instance, our 42-inch was a LG panel in the TV and a Samsung tuner board, because I felt the two best value for money ones. But in terms of influencing the development of that technology, we're not at the forefront of it. Okay, I think people make the decisions of what we're buying. We access reports and statistics such as what are people searching for in Google. You know, companies used to have to go out there and say, oh, fill out our survey and you could win a TV, and, you know, get inaccurate responses because people just want to fill it out quickly. You know, we're getting accurate responses. You know, you're not going to search for something if you're not interested in it. So we're seeing, you know, we're seeing what people are interested in first. We're buying the reports, we're buying the data, we're analysing what people are searching for. We get to see what AdWords or what keywords bring people to our website. And based on that, we know what the next products are.
So in terms of your philosophy about bricks and mortar versus online, do you think you'll ever have a bricks and mortar store?
No chance.
No? Why not? No. Is there anything that bricks and mortar does?
I want the business to move forward. I'm not going to take backward steps.
That's all right, backwards is how can you speak someone to play out for to get AVI
without
even seeing it work.
Okay, 7-day money back guarantee should be the number one. Well, it's not as risky as it initially might seem. Reading what a few hundred people have thought of purchasing that TV might also, you know, be a good step to making you more certain about that product. Reading what other people out there thought about our service, customer service, our support. You can read about people that have had warranty jobs.
So you think a hands-on experience with something is necessary for the buying process?
Not really. Like, go to a big retail store. There'll be months where the LG looks better. There'll be times when a Sony looks better. There's other influences going on in the background. And unless you sit there and like do a full, you know how to calibrate a TV and put them side by side and look at it, I don't think you're getting that much extra value to justify spending double or triple the price.
You're going to have another shot at Android?
Oh, we're in the process of it at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
With Android, we were upset we couldn't launch it. If you guys want something to think about with regards to Android, why is there an open source piece of software out there that any of the phone companies could implement onto their phone within 1 minute based on the engineering teams they have, but somehow only one company has got Android phones on the market at the moment while others are delaying? So just something to think about.
What's your answer to that?
I can't make any further comment.
Soon, what's the rough time frame?
Looking at about hopefully 3 months at this stage, but a lot of it's out of our control.
What do you think
of the HTC Dream? I think it's a great phone, and I think Android will bypass iPhone very soon as long as it's true open source.
There's a gutsy call.
Mm.
iPhone and Android going head-to-head, Android coming out the winner. I must admit, there's some interesting things that he made. That was Mr. Kogan, who runs, I think he's Russian, with that surname. I can't think of his where he's originally from. But anyway, he's doing online marketing of things like televisions. And I must admit, I couldn't buy that sort of gadget over the internet. Could you? Anyone?
No, I want to have a bit of a play with the device. I want to look and see what the interface is like. It's something that is going to be with me for a lot of time. For the next 2 years, at least, I'm going to be committing to this device, and I'm not going to be wanting to buy something like that and make that sort of commitment sight unseen. I need to actually hold the thing in my hand, have a play with it, see what the interface is like. Most importantly, trust my first reactions and first feelings and responses to it.
Well, I think you've got to bear in mind that if you're buying a big plasma or a big LCD, not that plasma's, you know, pioneer on the way out with those guys, and OLED is the new technology coming in with, obviously, the Sony side of stuff, you want to see it. You've got to put it up. You've got to compare the two side by side, unless you are really, really confident that you've done your research and you know the brand you're going to go online to shop. But from what he was saying, you mix and match, you know, a Sharp tuner and a LG screen or something like that. I must admit.
Yeah, but that's all well and good. It doesn't matter whether you're buying a television, in my opinion, or if you're buying an MP3 player, or if you're buying a telephone. You need to actually have a look at the thing in the flesh.
I think it does matter. I think some things lend themselves to that more than others. So, yeah, there's some things that you can buy online sight unseen, and others that you'd probably be more tempted to have a look at physically, and for different people, that line's going to be in a different place.
What can you think of that you would buy sight unseen, right? Or not unseen, but without having actually picked it up and physically operated it, had a look at how it works?
Well, things like an MP3 player, you might buy it on the specs rather than on using it.
Yep.
I
Yeah, but you can't go wrong with that. A television set looks different. Like you got.
But that's what I'm saying. That's where you draw the line.
Yeah.
And I think other people are going to draw the line in a different place. And some people might be happy to buy a TV on specs and reputation.
Would you be
and
comfortable with parting with that amount of money online?
Well, I wouldn't personally.
No, and it's likewise. You've got to overcome that technophobe type and the, yes, you've got a lot to overcome.
But it's not that long ago that people wouldn't have bought anything online under any circumstances, you know. And people wouldn't, you know, I won't use my credit card online and I won't do this and I won't do that. But and that line's moving.
Adam also caught up with the general manager of consumer platforms for Yahoo 7. Now, Yahoo 7 being the, I guess, the number two? I'd have to have a look. I'll have a look online in a sec. When it comes to search engines and things like that, they're trying to embellish their service. Because after all, you need a hook to try and draw yourself away from the big, you know, Google monster. And anyway, Adam caught up with the general manager of Yahoo 7, and this is what he had to say.
Hi, my name is Mark Kelvagen. I'm the general manager of the Consumer Platforms Group at Yahoo 7. We're here today talking about what we're doing with Yahoo. We've been rewiring our platforms to create an open experience. The reason we're doing that is that we have a massive engaged user base every month of about 500 million users globally. And what we want to do is create new and different ways in which they can engage with great content and great functionality to provide real value to those users. And the second thing that we want to do is we want to be able to provide third parties and other developers a way in which they can extend their web presence and tap into this massive audience. And so what we're going to be launching in Australia is what we call OpenMail. And the idea behind OpenMail is that we can let third parties and developers create extended functionality in the mail environment. So let me give you an example. Let's say you're a mail user and you log into mail, and you see on the left-hand side that there's some applications that you can install. And one application says text to voice. So you click that, and it's installed. Let's say you then go and start composing an email, and it gives you the option of sending it as a voicemail maybe, instead of just an email, because you know that maybe your mum or your friend is out and about, and they need to get it on their mobile. So you type in the mail message, click send, and that application then sends it as a voicemail. It's a very simple idea, and that's a very simple description, but it kind of gives you an idea of what we're trying to do here, which is provide real great extended functionality within mail and allow those third parties that access into that massive user base.
What about tying into other social media services, things like Facebook?
Great question. So, I mean, the other great thing about having these enriched, engaged user bases within Yahoo is that clearly a lot of our users use other community destinations. And, you know, I don't know about you, but it's sometimes a bit difficult to manage all of these different communities. And so if I can log into Mail and all of a sudden I can see that Adam over there has made a comment on Twitter or maybe he's uploaded a photo elsewhere, and I can see that activity within Yahoo Mail, that gives me as a user tremendous value because all of a sudden it's making my life easier and it's freeing me up for more time as well.
Yes. Too many gadgets in these new modern-day communications devices, or will it be accepted? It's certainly got merit. But will the masses adapt to something like that, having everything at your fingertips in one platform?
Some combinations work and some combinations don't work.
That's very true. There's a lot to be said for having everything in one device, but there's also a lot to be said for having discrete devices for
specific
functions.
Over time, we've learned where you can combine devices and where you can't, which combinations work better than others.
Yes.
And, you know, phone and camera in the one device, perhaps not such a good idea. Don't take really good pictures that way. No comment, Andrew.
Well, video calls have never taken off, have they?
Things,
really?
But who predicted when people started talking about this stuff that the most important thing to get the two devices in one would be the car radio and your Bluetooth car kit should be the same device?
Yeah, that's true.
And
I
that's
agree.
Vitally important that those two are the same device.
I'm still hanging out for the car radio to have mobile broadband connected to it so you can listen to internet radio stations while you're driving around. Now, wouldn't that be good?
I reckon that's coming.
Oh, absolutely. Now, whilst we were listening to that, I jumped onto Hitwise and having a look at the top website and search engine analysis page.
Yeah, now I was surprised when you said number two for Yahoo, because I would have thought Google and Microsoft would be one
of
two.
Yeah, they are. They're number three. If you put Google together, that's Google Australia, .com, they have approximately 90% of the search engine market stitched up in this country.
90%? I didn't think it would be that high. That's cool.
90%. 74.3 and 15.7.
Okay, yeah.
So there you go. Microsoft's live.com comes in at 4.22%.
Okay, yep.
Coming in after that is search.yahoo.com at 2.25%. Okay. Of the market share. So,
excellent.
You know, yeah. They're there. You just need a bit of a hook to sort of get more people to come across.
And it really shows that market domination that Google have got, despite the fact that all the Microsoft products default to the live side of things. Your web browser search bar comes pre-configured to search on Windows Live and your homepage defaults to 9msn.com.au if you're in Australia.
Absolutely.
So
by default, that's that sort of stuff. There's also, if you want to have a look at this, just visit Hitwise and go into the data center and have a bit of a look for yourself. Very interesting viewing this. The top websites for the week ending 14th of February, obviously Google was the top, 9.1% of all traffic on the internet.
Okay.
Second was Facebook, 4.23%. Third was 9MSN by default, 2.7%.
Yep, because it's the homepage.
Windows Live Mail, Google, eBay Australia, MySpace, YouTube, Yahoo 7, Gmail, and the list goes on. Microsoft, interesting one, the Bureau of Meteorology kicks in at number 12.
Oh, excellent, the bomb site.
The bomb site, which is terrific. And I would have thought that with everything going on down here, I would have thought that a lot of the essential services would have got a good run for their money in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, but yes. All right. So, there's some interesting going on. Thank you very much, Adam. That was Adam Turner, live on location up at the junket that is called the Media Connect Kickstart Conference in Brisbane. Thank you, Adam. All right. Some other interesting gossip before we go to the next break, because we've got so much to talk about tonight. And yeah. Interesting thing that came across the news today, Apple loses the iPod trademark bid. I think I was mentioning this to you off air before, Dr. Ron.
Yes.
Computer giant Apple has failed in its bid to trademark the word pod in Australia due to an objection from a guitar electronics company that produces a product by a similar name.
I thought you were talking about the word iPod.
No, pod. They've tried to go for pod as well.
And pod is already trademarked here.
Yeah, guitar accessory group Line 6, which manufactures the pod device, blocked the trademark claim, arguing it has a pre-existing trademark in the same category. So, and I must admit, I've been down the trademark thing with IP Australia, Wendy, hi if you're listening. They're very good people up there. They're in Canberra. It's a government organisation.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to get a trademark. Let me tell you, you've got to wait 7 months because it has to be published globally. It protects your brand worldwide. But it'd be interesting to have an IP person come in and straighten out a lot of
those
facts.
Yeah, that confuses me, the whole worldwide thing. I don't understand how the jurisdictions work. And I think if we can get an intellectual property solicitor or legal expert on the
that
program,
type of IP. I'm used to a different type of IP.
No, not the pinging type IP. No. The legal
turn
IP.
Turn off your TCP IP and let's talk about intellectual property rights. No. Yeah, I don't understand how it all works internationally. That's very interesting. We need to get someone who is knowledgeable in the field in the program.
Absolutely. Well, let's see what we can find. Anyone knows, give us a call. Now, Dr. Ron, about 12 months ago, I said to you that a survey said, and you go, what survey? We have too many surveys. But nearly one-third of internet users buy from spam.
Yeah, this is sad. This is why we have such a proliferation of spam, because it's profitable for the spammers.
One in three people.
There's three people in this studio.
Yeah, that's a
and
worry.
I know it's not me. Which of you two did it?
Well, it wasn't me. A staggering 29% of internet users say they have attempted to purchase an item from a spam email. And this is according to a new survey by security company Marshall. The survey, which used the results from 600 respondents, we've got lots of surveys tonight, revealed that 29% of users say they have bought a product from a spam email. The firm also claims that there are around 150 billion spam messages sent each day. So stop it, all third of you out there. If you stop buying from spam, we wouldn't have any.
It wouldn't be worth their while to send it, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go, Dr. Ron.
That is staggering.
Another result. One in three.
That is unbelievable. Stop clicking on those links.
Yes.
Oh, I had somebody at work today send me an email. Please forward this to everybody in your address book. If you get an email with the subject, something or other, with a PowerPoint attachment, do not open it and send this to everybody you know. I thought, oh, no.
Let's say this again.
Do we have to say
anything
this
that tells you to send it to everybody in your address book is a virus? Just don't do it.
It's just propagating itself and tying up mail resources around the world for no reason whatsoever. If you get something like that, the best thing to do is hit the delete button and then call the person up on the phone and yell at them. Call them a silly sausage. Never do it again.
I haven't heard that for ages. Because a silly sausage. Well, and we've got kids.
You have to do something. Like, I clicked delete and I thought, Do I reply?
Tell me the single letter words.
Do I reply all and say, this is a waste of time, do not send these? Or do I ring them up? Or do I just ignore it and pretend that it never happened? It's like one of those socially awkward moments. You get this thing in the inbox, you think,
yeah, someone really needs to tell these people.
Oh,
yep.
Dear. What do you do?
Yep, you've got to tell them.
We need an etiquette guide for imbeciles in charge of email clients.
Need a gun.
We need a... Yes.
Okay, moving on. Are we getting violent here in the studio? There's people... They tried doing that with on Facebook recently with vigilantes. And
did they?
They got squashed fairly quickly.
Fair enough.
Other interesting things that happened in Sydney. A man was charged for pirating drive-in movies. Now, if it isn't bad enough that you get...
I've never seen a movie about a drive-in.
Haven't you? Yes, you must have.
Go on.
The man was charged with a number of copyright-related offences after using a video camera to record a movie at the local drive-in cinema. The 26-year-old was accused by police of using the video camera during a number of visits to the drive-in theatre, where he recorded several new release movies and uploaded them to the internet. Police also say the films have been linked to DVDs being sold in Australia. Now, there's nothing new about people getting into... doing these sorts of things. What is new is the method and the level of, you know, extent that the movie houses go to actually patrol movie cinemas now. Did you know that they're actually issuing night vision goggles and sights to attendants in movie centres with the appropriate training so that they know how to spot people using their mobile cell phones and video cameras to record the movies. Now, this guy...
Now, I've got a suspicion. I also heard that there's cameras being mounted above the screens looking back at the audience in infrared.
Yeah, well, you could be right.
Yeah.
The report also went on to say that they're using watermark technology on each of the films at the appropriate locations
so they
can track back to
which
where...
Which copy it was that was...
Where it was pirated from.
Ah.
Now, that's pretty snazzy, isn't it?
That's clever. Well, that's an old trick to determine the source of a leak.
Mm.
It is, but that's using, like in Photoshop, if anyone who's familiar with Photoshop knows that you can actually embed watermarks, copyright information into an image, which is not visible to the human eye. But if someone slices, dices, cuts a bit off or anything like that, that information is still detectable and workoutable. Yeah. It's not unlike the data dot technology that Subaru use on their vehicles to prevent theft. You know, they used to get these little spray cans underneath the vehicle, and they would spray these data dots underneath their cars.
If you broke it up into its parts, the parts would still have the dots on.
They would spray these parts under the car, millions of the little suckers, and then through an ultraviolet light and a microscope, they could tell who the owner of those parts were. So, you know, here the AFAC are now doing, or the cinemas are now doing it, to actually track back through these things. But it begs to ask the question, who would watch a movie which has been shot on a dodgy camera in a cinema downloaded on a... Obviously, there's lots.
People do, yes.
But why? Why wouldn't you just wait till it... If you couldn't see it in the cinema, wait until it comes out in the video library shop and hire the DVD.
Or at least one that's been ripped off the DVD that was submitted for ratings approval.
Yeah. Brian.
Sorry.
Hypothetically. But if there's one thing that's worse than the dodgy video, it's got to be the appalling soundtrack. How are they going to write a soundtrack? They're going to hold the microphones
up.
Well,
actually, the drive-through is ideal for that because you rip it off the FM radio
when
they
broadcast
the drive-in. Yeah.
You haven't been to Sydney lately, Graham, have you?
No.
Oh, good.
What happened in Sydney?
I would have hidden the camera.
This is where the driving guy was ripping stuff off, and
if I was going to do that in a car, I could hide the camera beautifully in a car. What is this pussy thing? Never mind. Just to go back a subject, somebody in the chat, Warlocks, made an excellent point. With these emails that go around forward to everybody in your box, these hoax emails, if you want to prove to somebody that the email is a hoax, a good site to do that is Snopes, which is a site that knows all about whether things are real or whether they're fake, whether they're urban legends. So the Snopes Urban Legend Database, snopes.com, is a good site for doing that.
Good work, Warlock. Yes, I've used Snopes before.
Speaking of Snopes,
it's an excellent site.
And these funny websites. Dr. Ryan,
there for hours.
We have a hard rubbish collection in our street at the moment.
No, I was going to yell and rant and rave about iPrimus too before the end of the show. But
we were running out of time as per normal because we should go for 3 hours. But anyway. Was this mattress website you were saying? People take photos of mattresses and stick them up on websites.
Yeah, Andrew was telling me on the weekend, we've got a hard rubbish collection near our place at the moment, and Andrew was saying he was lugging a mattress out onto the front nature strip. And I said,
take a photo of it.
I hope you're going to take a photo and send it up to streetmattress.com. And well, Andrew said, what?
Yeah, what?
I said, yeah, there's a Graham's dialing it up.
I don't believe it exists.
There's a whole underground cult that actually monitors the welfare of mattresses that are dumped in streets.
Stick and with us here on Tech Talk Radio. Yeah. You'll learn all these sort of things. I'm going to cut you off because we have to go.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
Western Digital have managed to release a 2 terabyte hard drive. Available in Australia for $469.
I need one of those.
Yeah.
Need several of them, actually, for video editing. Coming
absolutely,
very handy.
Don't we all these days? But we need them for backing up. You know, if you've got 2 or 3 PCs at home, you need a couple of these to do the backup.
2 terabytes.
But 2 terabytes in one standard. It's a normal SATA 3.5-inch drive, same as your normal hard drives. It's a Western Digital Caviar Green series. It's the WD200.
They're a bit slower than the normal ones, aren't they?
Yeah, not quite the speed performance. Yeah, not quite so much. And there's a lot of talk about that. I'm looking for the average speed. I can't spot it immediately. But yeah, it's not as fast as some drives on the market. But the extra capacity is a thing. If capacity is what you need, Western Digital have been the first to get there.
The only problem with big drives is the higher you fly, the further you fall.
Well, that's true. But also, because it's part of the Western Digital Green series, that's possibly part of why the speed is impacted, because it's designed to run cooler and a bit more energy efficiently and a bit quieter than a lot of drives. So it's probably a good look if you're looking for particularly a drive and a backup system.
Excellent. Available in Australia. How much did you say?
In Australia, Australian dollars, $469.
That sounds cheap.
Yeah, not bad at all.
When you think about it?
Yeah.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
If you're a Twitterer and you use Twitter...
I do.
You should have a look at this website. Twitterfall. Twitter, FALL.com. This is a fantastic site. Lets you filter Twitter's public timeline for keywords or discussion topics.
What's the difference between that and the search?
You should have a look at this. Very, very nice all interface, right. This one. The actual Twitter messages or the tweets, they cascade down the screen in a very easy-to-read format. You can modify the fall rates. You can modify the interface language. You can set up a page theme, and you can filter on any or all of the top 10 Twitter topics. You can also add your own filters and your own custom searches. You can even add location-based filtering, Andrew. If you only want to see what the tweets that are coming from, or the tweets that are coming from Twitterers in Melbourne, for example.
Lots of tweets on Twitter, let me tell you.
Indeed. Best of all, this site is free, and you don't need a Twitter account to use Twitterfall. So if you just want to see what it's all about, and you don't even have an account with Twitter, check it out. Twitterfall.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Now, Grace stole my thunder here to an extent, but that's okay.
Oh, it was great having Grace on. She was saving.
It was very good. We had like a preliminary odd spot there in the middle of the program. Almost 1 in 2 Australians admit using their mobile... phone.
They've been talking about it on the forum.
While on the toilet, according to a survey revealing how entrenched mobile phone use has become. The survey, commissioned by Microsoft Australia, completed by 2,500 people across Australia, China, India, Japan and Taiwan, was conducted to determine just how integral the mobile phone has become in society. It also found that 48% of Australians admit using the mobile phone while in the toilet, compared to 66% of Chinese people who do so. Of the occasions surveyed, 80% of people said they would use their phone while eating a meal, while others... With others, 62% said they'd use it while driving, and 48% they would do so while trying to sleep. Why would you say
how do you do that?
While you're trying to sleep? You're not trying to sleep, are you?
No, not if you're communicating. That's something a Gen Y would do.
Yeah, it's while you're sending messages that say send this to everybody.
Yeah?
Yeah. Married women were also more likely to check their partner's phones than married men, while 30% of people admitted to using their phones to flirt with someone other than their spouse or partner. Again, 1 in 3, and there's 3 people in the room. All right, I'm guilty. A quarter of Australians... would use a GPS to track their partner's whereabouts.
Don't use that tracker thing on the telly.
Well, 13% said they would use their phones during extremely intimate moments.
Now, there's nothing worse than that.
That's a bit wrong. We need to get Grace back on the line. 13% would use their phones during extremely intimate moments. Right. All right, then. I think I should
I've seen movies where that happens, but I didn't think that happened in real life. But obviously it does. It's a bit like where'smymattress.com or whatever you had it before.
I'm not going to ask it. No, you should. No.
Go on up. No, don't.
There we go. There's our odd spot now, gadget now, website.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Ron. Thank you. It's lovely seeing you again.
Thanks
for having
me
next time.
Yeah, I reckon.
Have you got your roster yet?
I'll give it a crack. I'll see how we go. It's been a lot of fun. It always is.
Yeah. And thanks for the video tonight. Hello to everyone watching us on Ustream. We haven't been plugging it much. We've been talking about other things.
The camera's been the gaffer tape's been slowly peeling, and we've been slowly but surely panning around to the right. Yeah. It's very funny. Ustream.tv/TechTalkRadioAU. If you're not listening live, that's okay. You have a look later on. You'll see a recorded version of the program.
Okay. Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.